Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. No one's live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, Swaff Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. How the devil are you?
I'm good. I'm kind of excited about the experience of live streaming Super Showdown in a few hours from when we're recording this, but I'm not looking forward to the show itself. It's a weird dynamic.
Well, can I get you excited about something?
Yes.
Before we get into the main show, I'm going to give you a very quick recommendation for this week's episode of AEW Unrestricted, which is their podcast series, because they interview Cody on this week's episode, and the first 15 minutes is just Cody and Tony Schiavone geeking out over Star Trek.
What?
Yeah. And it's just them like talking about their favorite captains, like their opinions on Discovery.
Don't tease me, Luke.
Thoughts on Picard and everything. It's just Cody talking about his love of Star Trek and Tony being like, oh yeah, you know, and then he'd talk about his favorite bits for like the first 15 minutes of the interview.
Good Lord.
And then Aubrey ruined it by taking it back to wrestling. I was like, no, Aubrey.
God damn it, women. Let us talk about Star Trek.
But anyway, let's crack on into the show. But before we do that, if you're listening on Spotify, give us a little follow. If you're on iTunes, give us a little rating and review. That helps us get notes in the podcast feed. But click that follow button on Spotify if you found us that way. That's really, really important, we've been told. But let's get into the show itself. We're talking about the changed finish on this week's AEW. Here is the show.
Was there was one pin apiece going into the final?
Well, a DQ.
Yes,
and a pin.
Good point. The first ever DQ.
So a one fall apiece.
One fall apiece in the 30-man Iron Man match.
And the Iron Maiden.
And it gets down to the final 3 minutes. Pac has the Brutalizer locked in. It's locked in for ages. And Omega looks like he's going to tap. He reverses it. He puts him on the pin, but it's straight back into the Brutalizer. Gets the ropes. Brings him back straight into the Brutalizer. Omega holds on. It's declared a draw. The crowd are like, huh, yeah, it was good, but you know, it's a draw.
Wanted a finish here.
Pac decks the referee. It was Paul Turner, yep. I believe. And then Justin Roberts, in a great bit of acting.
Yeah.
He really got down the, I'm getting some breaking news from the back face.
Someone is saying something in my ear right now.
It's going to go to sudden death. And the crowd got very, very excited.
Erupted.
Aubrey Edwards, a second referee, runs down to call the final few minutes. And Kenny Omega manages to get the win with a one-winged angel.
Yeah.
And wasn't it something else as well? He hit a Kamigoye, which is Ibushi's finisher.
Yeah.
And then the one-winged angel. Now, great finish. Great match.
Awesome.
A lot of people are calling it the best match in AEW Dynamite history, so on TV.
Yeah.
There's an argument overall, including pay-per-view.
I posted up on Twitter. I don't often talk about wrestling on Twitter. I'm usually plugging my own little podcast.
What's that called?
It's called Under Consultation, the Games Master Retrospective Podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcast and on Spotify. But I put up on there, imagine thinking Kenny Omega isn't one of the best wrestlers in the world. Just like imagine being that person that doesn't think. And a lot of people, you know, have said his matches have not been as good as his New Japan work, which I do agree with. But he's still one of the best wrestlers in the world, and he is having these incredible matches in AEW, and he's rarely put a foot wrong. His story in 2019 didn't work, but they've really righted that wrong in 2020. And this match right here is just an incredible example of why he is one of the best wrestlers in the world. Take away nothing from Pac. Pac was also incredible in this match. But this match was just, it was amazing.
For me, if I had to choose, I still think Nick Jackson versus Rey Fénix is my favorite.
Yeah.
Because it's Fénix. But why did it end in that way? Why didn't it end in a draw? Dave Meltzer knows why. The reason this happened the way it did was because of the Pac versus Will Ospreay match in London.
Yes.
This was a match from last year.
Yeah, High Stakes 2019. It was in February last year. It was just after, like, Pac had come back from doing, like, did the Dragon Gate stuff, and then this was like one of his first. I think it was his second RevPro match because he had one with Zack Sabre Jr. as well. So this was like, this is in York Hall, this was RevPro's home turf. But Pac was still in that whole open the Dreamgate championship thing where it's like he didn't want to be losing anything while he was champion. They also didn't want to beat Will, so they went to a 30-minute time limit draw. And the crowd cottoned onto it quite quick when they kept announcing 20 minutes of the match left, 10 minutes of the match left, it's 5 minutes of the match left. And you could feel the crowd murmurs going, we're not getting
finished. We want to finish.
And it went to a time limit draw, and the crowd crapped all over it.
Which is, I think, unfair. I believe Pac and Ospreay going to a time limit draw. We've seen a few time limit draws on Dynamite anyway.
Yeah.
I've got no qualms with that. You don't want to beat Omega. You don't want to beat Pac. But this was a Tony Khan call. Off the back of that, not very widely seen match.
No.
Khan was at that show.
He was at that show, yeah.
So they teased that finish to make everyone knowing that, so they'd be pissed, and then to have this massive sort of cathartic upswing of support when they announced that it's sudden death. Yes, we will see a finish.
Yeah, and you know, I had the sort of same reaction when it came to the draw, because I thought we might go to a draw, and I was like, oh, man. But you know, at the same time, I don't really mind because I want to see more of this match. And so I kind of wish they had done the draw, even though, you know, the crowd wouldn't have been as receptive to it. But I do think that they did something that was quite good in saving Pac somewhat. Because Pac would have won the match had it not been for the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
Because the Young Bucks threw Omega back in while he was being counted out behind the referee's back. So Pac would have won this match had it not been for the Young Bucks interference, which actually ties then into their tag match. They've got a Revolution. So a lot of spinning plates in there. So I thought they did protect Pac as much as they could do in this loss.
I will also add that, sure, it went 30 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the closing moments of the actual 30 minutes of the match was Pac had Omega locked in the Brutalizer. He had him locked in for 3 minutes. He was so close to tapping. Omega was like that, stopping himself because he could see the timer, the clock running out. If there wasn't that break in time and it just did go to overtime, Pac would have won.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Pac had the match won on several occasions, yeah.
So that's, I think, I know the Bucks helped Omega in, but of course Pac cheated as well. There was underhand tactics, we'll get into it. But I think he was more protected by the fact that there was that gap between the actual 30-minute match, which he would have won, and the restart.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I thought it was, I just thought it was a really, really great match. It was an interesting day, though, on that Kenny Omega being thrown back in by the Bucks. Jimmy Corderis tweeted out that spot didn't make any sense because AEW do 20 counts.
Mm.
Do they?
AEW don't do 20 counts.
Well, that's what I thought, because he said that doesn't make sense because AEW do 20 counts there, and they did a 10 count spot there. But I always thought they were doing 10 count spots. I know New Japan do 20 counts.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure then if I'd misremembered something, because I really, like, I got so emotionally wrapped up in that moment. So, I mean, well, you know, I'm throwing this out into the chat. Mm. Has AEW, have they had a history of doing 20 counts?
I can't remember now.
I honestly
now
can't remember. So, yeah, no, yeah, someone's just said there. AEW always did 10 counts.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just deferred to Jimmy on that one, so, like, I'm sure that he knows more than I do.
So, the actual match itself, they've changed Kenny Omega's entrance video.
That was it. That, as soon as they changed that, and it's, like, all about him winning now. It felt like this is the video package we were supposed to get when he finished his redemption arc story that started last year. But they kind of like shot that in the head and was like, no, let's not do that anymore. You're just now the best wrestler in the world. Yeah. He's like, okay, that's my character again. But he still had the, I'm a bit sad though.
It was just him walking with an expressionless face and a rucksack on through Tokyo, through Shibuya. That doesn't get me excited for a match.
I know, dude, I know.
But and I've now, been saying it forever, and this works so much better.
And now it's all about him winning and holding titles and being the best, and it does make you go like, oh yeah, he is really good. I'm way more into this match now.
Yeah. You can see how excited I was when I saw it in my notes. It's all in capitals.
Yeah.
But anyway, we won't go through a full play-by-play. You just really recommend going to watch this match. I mean, it's one of the best matches of the year. So definitely check it out.
So good.
But it was, they've got 30 minutes to fill. You think they're going to spread it out? No. A few lock-up bits in the first minute, and then it sort of breaks down, and then they just go nuts.
It was so good.
Terminator dives outside.
Amazing.
Just one winged angel, one brutalizer reversals.
The brainbuster off the top rope.
Ugh.
Like that. And it felt like Pac, in characters of the kayfabe world, changed his mind during the doing of that move. Like, he was going to suplex him, because that would be his thing, doing the top rope suplex, but changed it in midair into the brainbuster to kind of alter Kenny's falling. But that was really, really good stuff. And, like, the boot by Kenny Omega when he just kicked Pac, and Pac goes, whoa! Right into the corner. That's amazing. And they had some great near falls.
Yes.
Like the Tiger Driver, 98.
Yeah.
The reversal of the one-winged angel that Kenny then reversed into the German... So Pac reversed the one-winged angel, and then Kenny reversed that reversal into that German suplex, like this tight, folding up German suplex. Amazing.
That was
stuff.
A pin, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then about 15 minutes in now, Pac's kind of had enough. He's had a few near falls. He's round the outside. He grabs a chair in full front view of the referee, clobbers Omega over the head with it, and then a second time, Bucks run in, and they're like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? They're checking on Omega, and the referee calls for the DQ.
Yeah.
Because that's, that's not allowed. There's a 30-second break, which I love in Iron Man matches. You know, like, the Iron Man stipulation gets a lot of stick from people. They're like, oh yeah, but it doesn't really matter until the final few minutes. I love Iron Man. I've come to realise I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
Same with the 2 out of 3 falls stuff. Oh, yeah. But only the last fall counts. But I really enjoy the story of how to get there.
Yeah, you got the drama to get to that final fall.
And I love the strategy. I love the strategy of, I'm just going to DQ myself here to get a fall immediately after, which is Pac gets up, Black Arrow, he gets a fall. So we're one apiece going into the air break. Interestingly, first DQ in AEW Dynamite.
I mean, they should have had one on the first episode. And I think they've also should have had like 2 or 3 in other moments as well. But yeah, this is actually the first DQ, actual recorded DQ.
So the company has made a conscious decision to not do DQ finishes, because that kind of implies a cheating of the fans. And this is okay, because they did it within the confines of a larger match, where it's not the finish. And even the finish, the draw finish, they didn't cheat fans out of that as well. It's almost like they've got the fans in mind.
I know. The other spot we didn't talk about in that first fall was when Kenny looked like he was about to try and do a one-winged angel off the middle rope.
Yes.
That Pac then reversed into this amazing powerbomb. And then the V-trigger near fall as well. But during the ad break, it was just Pac beating up Omega because now he's got the complete advantage because he's been battering. He battered this dude with a chair.
Yeah.
That Michinoku driver off the apron was rough for both of them. I'm sure they're both fine, but I wouldn't want to take it.
I muted the crowd there because there was lots of holy S-word chants.
Yeah, the ref got bumped, so Pac grabbed a table and hit the shooting star press off the top rope to the floor.
And this table had such a lovely Kit Kat break that it sort of folded up and hit him and hit Pac in the head. It was brutal.
Yeah. It was an incredible spot.
Yeah.
You know, a shooting star press from the top rope to the outside through a table. That's me playing
toys,
video game.
Yeah, yeah. Or a video game for adults. A video game.
A video game. I will be playing with my AEW action figures, though.
Yeah. Have you ordered all of them?
I haven't.
And this is where Omega nearly got counted out and the Bucks threw him back in. And I honestly thought that was going to be a count out.
It was so close.
I thought Pac's getting the second win here by count out. That's really ingenious. But the Bucks threw him back in, which is even better because we haven't talked about this yet. The Bucks were at ringside for Omega the entire time, despite the fact they are, you know, competitors this coming Saturday over the tag titles. But Hangman Page was not at ringside. And it was just sort of more in this, what is the greatest story in wrestling currently, that is fueled even further during their sit-down interview, which we'll talk about later.
Which, for my money, is the best thing on the show.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
With this match on, still the sit-down interview.
Yeah.
Incredible stuff. But then it's the final sequence that we spoke about. Locked in the Brutalizer for ages, goes to sudden death, and then Omega gets the win. Just an absolutely incredible match.
Yeah.
Incredible match. And just to wrap up this segment, Tony Schiavone, however Jericho mispronounces it.
Schiavone
interviews Pac on the ramp and says, like, you've been sort of abusing Kenny and his friends and stuff for months, and you
lost
to
mate.
Him.
And he's like, are you taking the piss?
Yeah. The crowd booed Tony. I liked it.
Yeah.
It was kind of like when Mean Gene has a moral compass.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was on the side of Tony in this. I thought it was great interviewing work.
Yeah.
And Orange Cassidy came out.
And I knew that this match was being announced because I was going through the comments in our AEW predictions video yesterday, and someone said you forgot to do Pac Cassidy. And I'm like, well, video came out before that happened. Also before the Nyla Statlander match was announced as well.
Yeah.
So I knew this was coming. And when I was, during the first match, I saw a lot of people dressed up as Orange Cassidy. I was like, they're going to lose their goddamn minds when this gets announced. And when he came out, this crowd lost their minds when he went up to Pac to do like the hands in, and Pac just lays him out. He's got no time for this joke.
And we're getting Pac versus Cassidy at Revolution. A match that I am looking forward to so much.
And it's had pretty much no build. But yet it's somehow had more than Nyla Rose, Chris Statlander.
Yes. Orange Cassidy hasn't wrestled a single match on Dynamite. And everyone is so into... You know, there will be people who do not like the idea of this match. I would say comedy wrestling has always been a part of wrestling. Even that 80s style you love.
Yeah,
New Japan, they still have bits like this. And variety on the card is so important. And Pac's not going to come out of this looking rubbish. He's, you know, they'll find a way to protect both guys and stay true to their gimmicks. So trust in AEW here. But I am enormously excited for that bout.
I'm really looking forward to it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, Podswafters. If you're listening to this right now, I want you to take a second and look down. When was the last time you shaved your junk? It's been a while, don't lie.
So let's thank today's sponsor, Manscaped, for holding people like you accountable to getting rid of the funk and shave your junk. Regular listeners to this show will remember my shaving mishap story. There's still a tiny bit of blood on my bedsheets.
But that won't happen again thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology. They've also got anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. I mean, I put deodorant on my body, so I guess I should put some on the smallest part of my body, right?
Smelliest.
Sorry, what?
The script said smelliest, you said smallest.
Oh, can we get a retail?
And when you purchase the new Perfect Package 3.0 kit at manscaped.com, for a limited time only, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The shed travel bag worth $39 and the high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped boxer briefs.
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code WRESTLETALK at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com with the code WRESTLETALK to get 20% off and free shipping.
Support WrestleTalk, support Manscaped, support your balls, and use the code WRESTLETALK at manscaped.com. Your neat and tidy balls will thank you.
Get into your super chats on the subject of the finish. Nate Drop Surname says, best TV match anywhere since ... Amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just really, really great stuff. If you haven't seen that match, like, go out of your way to see it this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. You owe it to yourself to go and watch that match. It's incredible professional wrestling.
I'd say best TV match since, you know, that four-way tag. Since that... When Omega and Paige won the tag titles, when Nick Jackson took on Phoenix, it's like AEW keep putting on these great TV matches. And I do think it's because they've only got 4 pay-per-views a year.
Yeah.
They can spread this out on TV more. Love it. Marco Talon 12, super chat for Kenny's new entrance video.
Yes,
finally. Jobber JJ 496, yet another great AEW. It's been just a flawless run.
Yeah, this
apart from the women's division.
This 2020 has been very, very good to AEW.
I was already excited for the pay-per-view and super excited. Pac versus Orange Cassidy. That's a thumbs up party.
Is indeed.
But do Orange Cassidy's way. A very low effort thumbs up.
Yeah, but on Saturday, he's going to try.
Colostopia, if Paige turns heel, you can't blame him.
Yes.
That's what's so great about his character. Also, Pac versus Orange hype. JR really loves dipping dots.
Not the dipping dots!
Says was in the brawl at the end.
Yeah.
This has turned into a bit of a meme. I was looking at Reddit, and all the comments for this episode was just, dipping dots!
Because that happened to them previously. And when they did the brawl with the Inner Circle with Cody. Yeah.
I'll just do two more. The Bad One, Ryan B. Bad. If you haven't seen the Revolution Countdown show that aired after Dynamite, you really should. It's so good.
I wonder if it's like... Because the build-up video they did for Double or Nothing was flawless television stuff. Mm. And so I'm kind of hoping that this is kind of in that similar vein. I'm going to try and watch it tomorrow.
Apparently, it's a Tony Khan thing.
Hmm.
He loves the UFC build-up shows. The main event to this episode was very UFC influenced. It's just, I feel like 2020 AEW is what I thought AEW was when it launched.
Okay,
but it wasn't. in that 2019 bit, it was like, you know, here's the librarians, here's the Dark Order, which, you know, is fine, but I wanted a sports-based New Japan version
of Western wrestling.
Western wrestling. And, you know, this all coincides with the reports that Tony Khan has taken the book more. And every time I hear about something I like, Dave Meltzer's there going, that was a Tony Khan move. That was a Tony Khan idea. I'm just like, is he actually the new... Is he the US Gado?
Yeah. Yeah, it could be, man.
And let me just do this last one. Very generous from J. Babe Bates.
Thank you very much.
I was at AEW last night in Kansas City.
Yes.
And they played Broken Matt Hardy's laugh during the commercial break. And everyone was doing delete chants. You don't have to believe me, but I wouldn't pay to have this pinned.
Now, I've got a theory on this, but I'm going to save that for later in the
show. Yeah, because there was a little spot.
The Dark Order promo, indeed.
So we've already talked about the opening match. Then we get a little interview bit backstage with Lexi.
I don't know what her surname is. Her name is Lexi.
You know she's DDP's daughter.
Is she really?
Mm-hmm.
One that MJF wanted to hook up with.
I don't blame him. And she's outside the Inner Circle's dressing room, which is called Painmaker Posse.
Yeah, because they were doing the big sort of weigh-in thing later. And when they all came out with the Painmaker Posse tracksuits, I was like, okay, that's actually pretty genius.
Yeah.
Because like Painmaker Posse, like, that's quite lame. But then when you see them all do it, it's like, oh, it's lame on purpose. I get it now.
I loved it. Yeah. And Jake, it's kind of dodgeball-esque, especially when they came down to the ring with their entrance. Jake Hager answers, and she asks him the question. He's a mute. Yeah. He doesn't speak. Great. Then we get the Inner Circle versus Jurassic Express. Santana, Ortiz, and Sammy Guevara repping here. This was just... I think the crowd would have been going ballistic for this match if it wasn't for the incredible match that happened beforehand.
Yeah, I completely agree. And even though the crowd were super into this match, well, because this was a 8-minute match where they did 15 minutes worth of stuff, and it was just all action all the time. If you are one of those sort of like, you know, tag team pedants of just like, where are the tags? This was just like, no, we're just going to go out there and just do nothing but spots for 8 minutes, and the crowd will love it.
Yeah, it's like no tags, and here's Marco's stunt. It's like they're trying to make Jim Cornette implode.
I struggle to take notes on this.
It's impossible.
Yeah, but it built from the Battle Royale last week. In fact, both the tag matches we got built from the Battle Royale. And I've just written, crazy action to kick things off. This is bonkers. I love it. Everyone is great. They all do spots. Luchasaurus gets a hot tag and runs effing wild.
Yeah.
And they did this big three, like triple running boot onto Sammy Guevara, kicked his head off into the next century. And then Luchasaurus was something else in this match. His kicks and the way he moves around the ring are lovely. Just lovely stuff.
And the finish comes when Sammy Guevara's setting up to use Santana and Ortiz's sock full of pool balls. And he's going to hit Jungle Boy with it. But Darby Allin is there.
Yeah.
He grabs the sock. And that distraction lets the Express win. There's a little brawl. And Sammy is annoyed and walks off. Very, very nice booking.
Yeah, really, really nice stuff.
Like, to set up that Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara Revolution match. And then in the break...
And another win for Jungle Boy there as well.
Oh, yeah, good point. Darby's got the placards and he's saying, you know, at Revolution, the coffin will drop.
I'm really looking forward to that match. Really am.
Darby Allin got a huge pop as well.
Yeah, like, off the back of that pop he got last week, like, his star is on the rise.
Yeah, I've got to be honest... He's kind of Jeff Hardy to me, in that I don't quite get him.
Yeah.
But you can't argue with the reactions he's getting. I think he's very inventive for the way he approaches a feud. Everything makes sense. He's added the losing of the voice makes him scarier.
So I only saw Darby for the first time last year at Super Strong Style when we were there for the Progress.
Yes,
that was the first time I'd seen Darby Allin. And he was one of those guys that as soon as he started, I was like, oh my God, I love this dude. Mm. Like when he made his entrance and the way that he is presented and his sort of look and style, I was like, oh, I'm really into this dude. Mm. Very much looking forward to seeing what he does in AEW. And I'm really excited to see his star on the rise now. I completely get it though. Like you on the Jeff Hardy thing. But I was also a big Jeff Hardy mark, so maybe that's where it
comes
from.
Yeah, I think they are. He is like the modern day charismatic enigma.
Completely agree. Better gimmick than the charismatic enigma.
We got a MJF Cody video package, which was just superb. Yeah. That's all we got for them on this show.
My only two criticisms I had against this show, like, and these are big criticisms, I would say, was no Cody and MJF, which I really think you could have done something off the back of that cage match last week, and no build for Roe Statlander. Like that, and that's a really big one.
Yeah.
Like, that's such an oversight. Mm. And actually, I think it's an unforgivable oversight as well. But this video package was good, and it was really good, but I would have liked to have seen an in-ring confrontation between the two.
But I mean, they have spunked their load. They've just put on so many great segments. It didn't need anything more, and I guess maybe you want that last thing to be the peak of the story, mm-hmm. As opposed to doing an inferior follow-up this week. Not that it would be bad, but just how the hell do you top the cage match? Yeah. Then we got Best Friends versus Butcher and Blade. After being initially cool on Butcher, Blade and the Bunny, which is, you know, sort of AEW's fault for the way they debuted.
It really was.
I really look forward to their matches.
Yeah.
Just because I want to see the Butcher do that walk around the ring. He's awesome.
His look is something else. he's got a great look about him. And actually, you know, Blade has as well.
Yeah.
And the Bunny out there with them is also a really... I just think they're a very cool unit.
My problem with them, the only thing I'd fix, is that Bunny, Ali, at the moment, feels like a valet.
Yeah.
Like, she should... Why isn't she having matches in the women's division? Because then they're a threat. Like, the whole unit is a threat. But at the moment, Bunny is just this... you know, sexualized woman who comes down to the ring with them and does an interference spot behind the referee's back. When she is a very good wrestler.
Yeah, it's not the best use of Ali.
But this was a really fun match, not as exciting as the six man, but it had an excellent spot where everyone's out of the ring. Orange Cassidy gets in, Bunny gets in, and Bunny takes Cassidy's sunglasses.
She stops him doing the hands. Yeah. Cassidy as well, selling the jaw. The whole way down, sort of like trying to put his jaw back into position. Yeah, he goes to do the hand. Bunny stops him and takes off his glasses and puts it on. The commentator's like, you never steal a man's shades.
Yeah. But then, I was like, oh, where do you go from here? And Cassidy just gets Bunny's ears and puts it on his head.
It was so good. It's such a stupid, goofy spot. But I laughed so hard at home. Yeah. I popped massively for
because
it.
They're treating it seriously.
Yeah.
And it just makes you believe in it so much more. Orange's timing is so good because then he ducks an attack he doesn't know is coming and then he dodges something else. It's a whole mishmash and it ends with the Best Friends pinning the Blade.
Yeah, with Strong Zero. Yeah. So Cassidy wiped out Butcher on the outside with a dive. And Bunny's reaction to their loss was... really good. So actually, this feels like this is a feud that isn't over yet.
Yeah, a lot of babyface wins on this show. Mm-hmm. I guess because the ending was quite heel heavy.
And we're getting a lot of heel wins.
Probably. And that's when Tony announces he's in the ring. I love how they use Schiavone.
Yeah, because he got off commentary. Mm-hmm. Like after that first match and Taz took over. So because Tony took on this sort of like interview role, like on the stage and then in the ring and then later on for the weigh-in.
I don't think that's the worst idea.
I don't think so either.
I love Taz on commentary.
Yeah, Taz was great.
Tony's great on commentary, but what really does he bring apart from, wow, wrestling's changed so much. I love this new style of wrestling.
90s nostalgia.
However, when he's used in that interviewer format, he's really, really effective.
Yeah.
He's like sort of he's not the backstage interviewer. He's the onstage interviewer. Sorry, Alex Marvez. He seemed like a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I'm sure he is a nice guy as well, but... yeah.
It just didn't work out.
You're not Jim Ross, you're not Tony Schiavone, you're not Taz.
Yeah. Few people are. Then Chuck Taylor cuts this promo saying the joke's on Pac because we know this time Cassidy's going to try.
And the crowd start chanting, please don't try, please don't try.
And Trent grabs the mic and says, well, he didn't actually tell us that. It's a shame Chuck isn't allowed the mic more often because he's very, very funny.
Yeah.
He also swears a lot and makes a lot of bad taste jokes. So maybe that's why he's not given the mic. But I find him hilarious. Unfortunately, the next segment wasn't so good. There was a cultaholic sign in the crowd.
Well, you know, sometimes marks can infiltrate wrestling shows.
It was the
Try as we might.
It was the four-way for nothing. Well, it was to face the winner of a match this Saturday that was never really announced on TV, which is Nyla Rose versus Chris Statlander for the women's title. No actual build on TV, really, since the match was announced on social media.
Real shame.
So here we've got Yuka Sakazaki,
yep,
who I love. Big Swole, Shanna, and Sheeta.
Yeah.
I love all four of these.
I'll be honest, when the graphic came up at the start of the show, I thought it was a tag match.
Yes.
And I wrote down in my notes this was a tag match, and then all four of them squared off, and I was like, oh no, it's a fatal four-way.
It's because this is so lazy. It's a shame because everything else feels like it's had months of thought put into it. You know, all these tag matches are spinning out of a battle royal from last week, and there's the rankings, and everything intersects. And you get to the women's division, and it's like they've just sent people out there.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're getting time. They're getting the chances to put on really good wrestling. And 4 years ago, that would have been revolutionary.
It really would have
because
been.
That wasn't happening.
Apart from TNA.
On WWE, at least. But now it's like they feel like such an afterthought.
You got your one match a week.
And I get the sense that they feel like they have to put this on.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar along those lines, actually. This does feel like this is, well, we've got to do this, which is what like the Divas division used to be. Mm. It was just like, well, we need to give the crowd their piss break, so we have to feature a match. Otherwise, you know, why are we paying them? And so to try and defend this in a way, this is the fourth week now of this sort of soft reset where you had Brandy drop the Nightmare Collective, which was really this anchor that was weighing the division down. And then the week following, you had Nyla win the title because the Riho experiment hadn't really got over because she missed a whole month of TV and she wasn't getting any storylines or anything. Not her fault. Absolutely not her fault. And then last week was the Nyla promo, which was really, really good. And Statlander and Big Swole kind of like squaring off. Sort of felt like, okay, so we're doing the, you know, this almost feels like we're doing some storylines now. They're not really storylines, but it's something. And then we got to this, and this felt like this was from 4 months ago when we didn't really know where this division was going. And it is just four women going out there, having a good match, but it doesn't really feel like anything is gaining stuff. The commentators are doing the best they can to say, like, this is, you know, establishing this pecking order of who is the next challenger. But it didn't really feel like that way coming out the back of it.
Plus, you've got the title match this Saturday. And unfortunately, as great as these four were, and I really, really enjoyed Sakazaki. She's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was by far the weakest match on the episode.
Yeah.
I just, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they had a lot of ideas for the men's division, but they had to kind of switch everything up in the last month or so because of the Nightmare Collective plans falling through. And they've done some course correction stuff, but maybe they're like, oh, okay, right, we've got ideas, but we need to properly sit down and think it out. Let's just put these people out for the next couple of weeks, get the pay-per-view done with, and then we can start building something properly. But we have been saying this since October. If it's the same next week, maybe Khan does have a bad side and it is just this kind of negligence over the women's wrestling.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't help that at the start of all of this, Brandy was saying we're going to have the best women's division in North America, like setting yourself up for a fall here. I'm agreeing with you. Like, what I would like to see is next week you see the sows being... The seeds being laid. I'm going to pick a different metaphor. Pieces being put into place that will eventually build to double or nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, I would like to think they have sat down and was like, okay, here is Revolution, here is Double or Nothing, here's what we'll do week to week to week to week to week till we get to Double or Nothing. And we can also do this that go alongside it to get us to Double or Nothing, which will then get us to All Out. Like, that is what I would like to see, as opposed to this is what we're currently getting.
Mm-hmm. But to summarise, Sakazaki was the most over thing here.
I thought Shida got some
good. Oh, well, yeah. But I would say Sakazaki was. Shida is amazing. She won in the end. Shida's my favourite wrestler in the women's division. I think she's incredible.
She's awesome.
Shanna was really cool. Big Swole has a definite charisma about her. I think she's so, so cool. But she is a bit clunky in the ring. There we go.
Yeah. Plug for AEW Restricted, which is their podcast, which I recommended that Ollie listen to this week, because the first 15 minutes is Cody and Tony Schiavone talking about Star Trek.
Why can't that be an in-ring segment?
It's just Cody and Tony doing week-to-week reviews of Picard.
Call it The Bridge. You know how they always... We haven't got a thing in AEW where it's an interview segment. Dark Order have a promo backstage. Very interesting choice of words here. Evil Uno is saying they're going to take on SCU, a revolution like we predicted, and it's the Exalted One's command that we beat them, and Daniels will realize he's obsolete.
I think this is Raven. This is another Raven moment. This is, you put Raven in that crowd to make Raven, you think the Raven is the leader. I think they're doing this with Matt Hardy as well. I think they're doing so much to
point it is to a lot.
And it's not just Uno and AEW, Matt's doing it as well. I think they're all doing this to make you think that it's Matt to reveal it's someone else. Because it's not like Matt's not done this in the past. Like when he was fired from WWE after the Edge thing, he went on a tear saying, I'm going to be at TNA this Sunday. I'm going to, basically, in so many words, saying, I will be at the TNA pay-per-view this Sunday. And then he re-signed with WWE. And because I think he is good at swerving people. And I think that they're doing the exact same thing here. I think they're doing all of this to swerve us so we think it's Matt to reveal it's someone else.
Yeah, I've been so sure Hardy's going to AEW. But Mike Johnson, did you read this quote?
But he was offered to go to NXT.
Well, he said he was offered the NXT role and WWE are doing a lot to try and convince Matt to stay. But, you know, I was like, so what? Matt's going to go. He wants to go with the Bucks. This has been so obvious for ages, like 2 years. But then Mike Johnson says, my gut feeling is that Matt will stay in WWE. And the last time I remember him saying that, specifically a gut feeling, is Edge returning at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
So when Mike Johnson's gut is reporting something, that's a higher track record than WrestleVotes.
I think this is all a ruse. I think this is to make you think it is something that it's not. That's just my prediction on this.
After that, we got the best segment on the episode, which is quite...
Oh God, this was so good.
It's a sit-down interview from earlier in the day, sort of filmed next to the ring, empty arena, JR in the middle, Paige and Omega on one side, the Bucks on the other. A sit-down between friends, between faction members, all still members of the Elite, remember, about their upcoming tag title contest against each other this Saturday.
Yeah, and JR, you know, calls them the best tag team in the world. He said, you know, the Bucks for my money, no disrespect to you guys, but, you know, the Bucks are the best tag team in the world. And Matt was saying, you know, we thought we would be the top of the mountain. We thought we'd be the tag team champs at this point. And you've just got Paige, like, just dismissing all these comments. Not, like, verbally dismissing, but just, like, giving these lies. When JR says they're the best tag team in the world, and he's like, what? I can't believe it. I'm the tag champ. And everywhere I go, people keep telling me that they're better than me. And then you've got the Bucks also. They're not trying to be dicks, but they think they're better.
Man, the Bucks are always heels. They're just heels we all really like.
Yeah.
There's a line here where, and you know, you've got, we didn't talk about this in the opening match. What the hell is Kenny doing accepting a 30-minute Iron Man match against Pac 4 days before the tag title defense?
Right.
Maybe that's why Paige wasn't out there. Maybe Paige is like, mate, priorities.
Yeah.
Do that later. And here he is. He has to sit there in front of these two guys who have sort of keep on saying, no, we love you. Stay with the Elite.
We're brothers.
We're brothers. And then, so a mate, like Paige is sort of, Omega says that this was all a beautiful accident. That Omega Paige weren't meant to be tag champions. They weren't even meant to be a team. It just happened.
It just happened organically.
And Paige is like, so we're an accident.
Yeah.
And Omega's like, no, it's not what I'm saying. Anyway, it sort of deteriorates from there. The Bucks are saying, look, it's the business. we want to win the titles, yeah. and we'll be friends at the end of it. And Omega,
they had a line where they, where I think it was Matt that said, "We're the best tag team in the world. You aren't. We are."
Mm.
Oh, and it was just like, that's just more fire for Paige to get. Let's get fired up.
And there were so many good lines in this, but the one that really stood out to me is this beautiful example of show, don't tell, which is Omega just caught between these two sides of the Bucks saying, we're going to win your titles. We're your best friends, but we're going to beat you for the titles. And Omega's just there going, it's all part of it. It's all part of it. Like, it's all part of the business. But what he's really saying is, oh, crap, this sucks. And it's just, it's amazing. And Matt's like, well, shake hands afterwards. Everything will be okay because nothing's bigger than friendship. And Paige goes, you know, like, you say, Paige sort of answered back. Nothing crazily out of the ordinary, though. Did we mention that he's drinking throughout the entire episode? And Matt says, like, the Bucks suddenly snap. Matt's like, we made you a star on being the Elite.
Well, yes, because he said, I've tried to walk away from the Elite. You keep saying, you know, we're the Elite. But I tried to walk away from that group, and you wouldn't let me. And that's when Matt and Nick snap, and they'd say, like, you were a nobody. Like, we brought you onto being the Elite. We literally made you a star. You were a jobber in Ring of Honor until we got involved. And it is just like a, ooh. And Paige had this, might be my favorite line from him. He said, this is the biggest accomplishment in my career and you're trying to take it away from me.
Brilliant.
And he said, you know what? I haven't got a drink anymore, so I'm going.
Mm.
And he just storms off. Because Omega's sitting there. You know, Omega's his tag partner, who should also be on Paige's side. And all he can say is, it's what the business is. And Paige's like, well, you know, my glass is empty, so I'm leaving. And they're like, oh, so you're walking out on an interview now, are you?
Yeah.
It was a super awkward ending to this segment in the best kind of way.
Incredible, incredible. And just like when they brought up ROH, you know, AEW aren't WWE. They don't ban mention in other companies. But that relationship is quite interesting, Ring of Honor and AEW. And to verbally say it, you know, pops the shoot person in me, at least. But yeah, the Bucks are coming at it like, this is business. Business, business, business. It's separate from personal.
We're the best tag team in the world, so we should be the tag champs.
And we can compartmentalize where we're going to do that, but then we can also go to dinner with you afterwards.
Yeah.
Whereas Paige, very understandably, has contorted it all together. Like, he's the opposite. They're completely linked in his head. And Omega can see both sides. It's like, when he's saying, it's part of it, it's all part of it, who's he saying that to?
Yeah.
He's saying it to himself to try and convince it. Excellent character work. Oh my God, it's the best story in wrestling. Effing hell. Move aside Ciampa and Gargano.
It's the match I'm most excited for this Sunday. Not just because I think the in-ring work is going to be incredible between all four guys. But this story has been built so perfectly, week by week by week. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen because I don't know. Like in my predictions, I predicted that they retain, but honestly, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is going. So I'm so excited.
They hug. That's great. The Bucks win. That's great. Paige turns heel. That's great. Omega turns heel. That's great. You know, there's so many ways they can go. I can't wait.
Yeah.
They run through the card for Revolution. I love the graphics. They're not moving. I would prefer if they were moving, but they've sort of rotoscoped real-life pictures, full-body pictures. It's quite nice. But then they bill next week as the Revolution Aftermath episode of Dynamite, and they announce that Lance Archer is joining AEW.
Apropos of nothing. They're just like, oh, by the way, Lance Archer's here next week. He signed with AEW. He's like, oh, okay, has he now?
Jeff Cobb wouldn't say exclusive to us, so here's Lance Archer.
Yeah, we've got Lance instead, mate.
Yeah, so he's sort of been courting with them for a while, and yeah, he's a great wrestler. Big guy.
Big guy.
Looking forward to it.
Hoytomania will run wild again.
And the main event was this just masterful segment. It felt so real. They built it like was a weigh-in for the championship match on Saturday between Jericho and Moxley.
What I liked about this is a different way of doing a contract signing.
Mm.
Like a contract signing is, like if they were to do a contract signing, I think you would get a lot of people saying like, oh, that's just a WWE thing. You're just copying what WWE do. So they've gone like, okay, well, let's do a different way of doing it. Because let's be honest, this was no different to a contract signing in terms of a brawl breaks out and someone gets hit on something.
Yeah.
But instead they did it as this weigh-in instead, and you had a photographer in the ring, you had Tony Schiavone, you brought down Gary Michael Capetta, who's a legendary announcer with 40-odd years worth of experience.
Sure.
No idea who this lad is. Absolutely. You had the Inner Circle coming down in their matching like tracksuit stuff, and you had ring girls in there as well. And it was just a completely different style of presentation that I really, really like.
I bought into it so much, I wanted to see the weights.
I wanted to hear what Jericho's weight was.
Yeah. And it's like, if I was to be hypercritical, I wish Moxley would have gotten into crazy lean shape. Mm-hmm. Because so the big part of the weigh-ins isn't, you know, obviously the official reason is to make sure you're the proper weight class. But it's also, I'm freaking jacked right now. I'm going to kill you in the octagon. It's all about posturing and mental mind games. So to see Jon Moxley get on the scales, 237, I think it was.
234, I think.
234, and then him just look normal.
Yeah.
I wish he looked shredded. That's all I would say.
I'm going to say that this is going to sound like a very weird sentence to say, but I wrote down that he's 234 pounds. Why do I care?
Why do I care about that? Because they made you care. They put value on it.
Yeah. Why do I care what Jericho's weight is? Because the weights aren't real. Mm. Like, they're likely all just made up stuff. And yet, I wrote that down as a note, as if it was important, because they did make me think it was important.
Because now you have a bit of extra detail going into that match. You're like, well, you know, Moxley's got the weight advantage, or, well, let's be honest, Jericho's probably got the weight advantage, but Moxley, you know, you can sort of put those details up against each other. It's a tale of the tape.
Yeah, and as someone who doesn't watch boxing, which I think was quite clear by me on the review saying Tyson Fury was celebrated for doing a boxing, and I don't watch MMA, I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know what someone having a weight advantage means.
It just means you've got more power behind the punches.
The only time I've ever known what weight advantage means is when people were facing Yokozuna. I'm like, well, okay, I can physically see that that man over there has a distinct advantage in this match. But I actually was really into this weigh-in.
Yeah.
This is my first ever weigh-in, WrestleTalk fans.
Wow.
SWAF Nation. I've never seen one before.
You popped your weigh-in, Sherry.
I did.
So Jericho does some local sports team or just local geographical location heat.
He said this place is a piece of ass. My favourite line of his, though, is when he tells the crowd to shut their ass.
So this is the second time he said shut your ass.
Yeah, it's a great heel line because it makes no sense.
It kind of implies your mouth is an ass. But yeah, it still makes no sense. I think this will be his catchphrase for the next couple of months. Jericho's not getting on the weigh-in thing. He keeps stalling. Excalibur has this fantastic line where he's like, Jericho knows as soon as he gets on those scales, he's sealed his fate.
Yeah.
That's why he's stalling. Jericho mouths off to Mox. So Mox just decks him in the head, presumably busting him open hard way. Jericho had to get 7 stitches.
Yeah, he looked slightly out of it as well.
I thought he was selling right, but
yeah, that's what I wasn't sure on this, because like he, you know, hit him hard enough to bust him open, and then Jericho selling it, and like, you know, a lot of people are around him and sort of like, let's all fight away from Jericho for a bit.
Yeah, well, hopefully it was a lot more worked, because I, you know, when there's safer ways to do it, there's really no purpose for busting someone open a hard way, with what we know about concussions now. But then it just goes the crazy, it's not overbooked, it's perfectly booked. Dustin runs down, he brawls with Hager, they brawl off into the concourse area, that's where the dipping dots spot
happens. Dipping dots happen, dipping dots.
Throws him into the sort of convenience bits. Then Darby runs in with a skateboard. He got one over on Sammy earlier. So Sammy gets one over on him now, gets the skateboard, hits it on Darby.
Breaks the skateboard over him.
Such good symbolism. And he gets that heat back from earlier. And then Sammy gangs up on Mox with Jericho. Mox is out. So Jericho hits the Judas elbow on him. Then a paradigm shift on from Jericho onto the scales.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so much symbolism there.
It was really, really good stuff.
I see a man with an eye patch, blindness, which a lot of this feud's been about. Old school biblical revenge, eye for an eye. And now you bring scales into the mix. It's just like this whole ancient exploration of justice.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
It was a really, really good segment. I really, really liked it.
And This is a go-home show. This is a go-home show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you're right, you're right. Because I am excited for every match on that card that they built.
That they built over time to get exponentially more interesting and dramatic. And now we've got a series of cliffhangers for this Saturday. Fantastic. Flawless. Last week's was a 5 out of 5 show. This has got to be a 5 out of 5 show as well.
I'm not going to give it a 5 out of 5 show because I do think the Nyla Statlander stuff is unforgivable.
Yes.
Like, everything they did was so on the money. But you cannot get away with that. I think that's really poor.
It is bad, yeah. So let's do the rest of these super chats before we get out of here, unless we've got any Patreon shows.
Nope, we did the last of them on Raw.
Right, so Liu Zhihao, thank you to our mod for translating the Chinese name.
And we probably still said it wrong.
I think it was a shame they didn't do the MJF and Cody angle with the first stipulation more. Still a great show, though.
Yeah, it's kind of what we were talking about last week with that you play up to the Cody can't touch him anymore, which is the simplest of those stipulations. I do think they could have done something around that.
Larry, I think the leader of the Dark Order is someone not hinted at or teased to, like someone like Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yeah. Hey, man. The Dark Order, man.
They've done it to such an extent now, I don't think anything's going to fully work, unfortunately. All Elite DK. YB mentioned,
Young Bucks
mentioned Bullet Club and ROH. What's happening? Is it a hint for a new relationship? Dark Order said CD, Christopher Daniels, will be absolute obsolete. Broken Matt confirmed. Yeah, that seemed, well, you think it's a red herring.
I think it's a red herring.
The Bullet Club and ROH stuff, I just think they're saying it and hoping for the best.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking to get that shoe pop. Like, you know, the thing that popped you, that's what they're looking for, is, you know, saying ROH to people go like, they said ROH, what does that mean?
CM Punk's famous pipe bomb promo. Maybe yeah. I'll go back to ROH. Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing? All Elite DK, Darby's gonna kill you chants were awesome. 3 crying with laughter emojis.
Man, there's so many matches I'm looking forward to on that card. We are gonna do a podcast review of it. Ollie and I will be reviewing it on Monday.
Yeah.
So while I won't be able to watch it live with you, I'll be able to review it with you all.
Pavi let Andy out of his cage. Omega intro finally doesn't make him look like a loser. Bucks helping Omega. Cassidy does a suicide dive to Blade or Butcher. What are the rules? First EQ.
Well, no, I mean, but it was behind the referee's back. The referee didn't see it.
Yeah. And the first EQ, that all makes sense. But the rules are very, you know, consistent, I would argue. DJ Mayer.
Now they are, anyway. They weren't in those early days.
My fiancée has never had an interest in wrestling. She was in the room when I started Dynamite. She ended up loving the whole show. AEW is so amazing.
That's very cool, man.
That is so cool to hear. Because, well, you from a personal perspective, you can enjoy this fantastic experience together. But also, what a good litmus test for AEW as a whole.
AEW are helping people just break through.
And a woman, no less. Trenton Brown. Darby's a skater, dresses in all black, and paints half his face. Adult me thinks he's cool. But 13-year-old me would think he's the greatest thing ever.
Abso-friggin-exactly.
Yeah.
Abso-bloody-lutely.
Totally right.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
13-year-old me didn't find skaters cool. So maybe that's why the disconnect is.
13-year-old me was going to see Rage Against the Machine. Maybe that's why I like him.
All Elite DK again. Man, Revolution is stacked. Cody versus MJF. Young Bucks versus Page and Omega. Jericho versus Mox. Pac versus Orange Cassidy. Dustin Rhodes versus Jake Hager. Darby Allin versus Sammy. Revolution will be hashtag too sweet. I mean, you've missed out. One match, Nyla Rose versus Chris Statlander.
Yeah.
But it had all that build. Yeah. Noah Fortner. I'm beyond sad that I have to work this Saturday night because I've never been more excited for a wrestling pay-per-view and every match on its card.
I'm doing something very cool this weekend that I cannot wait for. And I'm gutted that I'm doing it because what I would much rather be doing is watching Revolution.
Noah Fortner, I don't know what it is about Derby, but damn!
But damn!
Hard emoticon. Lego 1604, since the Dark Order is all about the many are one, wouldn't it be interesting if the Exalted One is actually several people?
Yeah,
that is an interesting way to take it. I don't think it would work just because there's already quite a few different leadership figures there.
Yeah, muddies the water ever so slightly, yeah.
Christopher Jazzcat.
Great name.
I'm still hoping the Exalted One is Raven.
Yeah, or TEW. He's talking about I think it was Total Extreme Warfare, which was the wrestling management game where you book matches on shows. So maybe he hopes that management system is Raven.
All Elite DK. New Japan version of Omega is back. The five-star machine is here.
I hope so.
And he also follows up. I only mentioned the matches which were built well.
Yeah.
Yes, we were being sarcastic about Rose and Statlander. But yeah, Omega really does feel like New Japan. I saw that a lot in the reviews. It feels like Bullet Club G1 Omega is back.
And not G1 as in the New Japan G1, we're talking about Transformers Generation 1.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega is back.
He's going to come out in like that purple design.
Right, let's do some Wrestle Talk related one. Amro said, what is the origin of who really is Byron Saxton? I was burst out in laughter.
I just say there's a joke format, you know, it's speech writing format as well, the rule of threes. I had two questions to sort of pose in a script 3 years ago, and I thought I'd just put in a stupid one at the end, who really is Byron Saxton, and then it sort of got over, yeah.
Dances with AK-47s. I cringe every time Ollie says he doesn't get Jeff Hardy. How? A good-looking, artistic high flyer, nobody like him. How do you not get him?
I know it's shocking, Dances with AK-47s, but not everybody likes the same stuff. In the most popular, wild, overly consented thing in the world, there'll still be a few people like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going against it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying for me personally, it doesn't connect with me in the way he obviously does with so many other people.
There are weird people out there who don't like Star Trek The Next Generation. They just exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My lady partner.
Joe Wright said, skip Ollie, short shorts for the win.
Yep. It's the AJ Lee punishment video.
Why are you doing that?
I mean, I know we're busy at the moment.
I know we're busy, but I wasn't saying like, dude, why haven't you done it? Because I know we haven't had time. My question was more like, are we doing it next week?
I don't know when, because Elimination Chamber's next week too.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, crikey.
Hey, you're doing it.
I know I'm doing it. I didn't know it's next week. Omni slash one.
My big hairy balls.
Keep up the great work, guys.
I'm glad that. It's difficult to make people enjoy advertisements.
Yeah.
But my big hairy balls got over. thank you very much, Preston Prince III, for your very generous donation with no comment. And All Elite DK with the last one. Spoiler alert, I'm the Exalted One. Three crying with laughter emojis.
Well, there had to be someone.
Wow.
What are your thoughts on the
car? Well, I've only seen the first episode. It's kind of hard to sneak in around my lady partner and the fact I'm trying to do. Have you heard about, it's not really in vogue anymore. It's called reading a book.
Yeah.
I'm trying to read books more.
Yeah.
And something's got to give. I still haven't finished season 2 of Succession, and I paid money for that series on Amazon.
Wow.
I bought it like I would a DVD.
You, Mark.
It was the same price as a DVD. I find that quite resenting.
Yeah. Because you're not getting the actual physical media itself. You're just getting a code.
But yeah, what was I ever buying it for, the physical object, or was it the content? So I shouldn't really be down on it.
That's what I hate about people. Exactly, you just wanted the content.
Yeah.
We've got quite a few emails. Sorry, did you actually have...
But yeah, I thought Picard was really good. We've kind of spoken about it before. It's just annoying that all the fun action stuff gets in the way of Logan. I went back home over the weekend, and my dad loves Star Trek. That's the one binding thing that we have mainly together.
Yep.
Because he just doesn't have any hobbies, but he loves Star Trek. Mm-hmm. We always used to watch it together. And he didn't know that there was one new Star Trek series out, let alone two.
Wow.
And I said, Dad, look, here is the remote control. Because he asked me what Netflix was. I tell him this every time I go around there. I saved up money 2 years ago. I bought my parents a proper TV. for Christmas.
I remember that big.
Yeah.
Remember you lording that over your sister. I was like,
yes, that was really fun.
Yeah.
But it's got Netflix on that. And I tell him all the time, look, you were always complaining about mum watching soaps. This is your portal to watching the sci-fi stuff you love.
Yeah.
And he's like, great, I'm going to do that. Never does. I was like, look, there's this thing called Star Trek Discovery out. It's a new Star Trek. And he was like, oh, it's got a woman as a captain again. I was like, get past that, Dad. Jason Isaacs is in it too.
Yeah.
And then I was like, and there's also Picard. So it blew his head. We watched the trailer to give him a flavour of it. My God. That Picard trailer.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found myself welling up a bit.
Yeah. It made my wife want to watch the show. Yeah. She's never seen an episode of TNG, but she was like, I really want to watch that show. But that's why I text you being like, is there almost too much closed off for her as someone who's not watched TNG?
No. It's amazing how much we've spoken about Picard and I've only watched one episode.
And I've yet to watch an episode. Well, on that subject, actually, we had this email in from Balafigs UK, who we see crop up in YouTube comments quite a lot, and on Twitter, who said, hey, Luke and the gang, I noticed you spoke about Lost briefly on a recent podcast, and I was hoping you could answer this. What exactly did you not enjoy about the show? I'm currently on season 5 of my second watch of the whole show, and I have to say it's my favourite show ever. I only watched it for the first time last November, so maybe binge-watching Lost is a way more enjoyable than how you did it back in the day. You had to wait week on week for another episode, and then a year for something for the next season. I hope you don't fall into the category of thinking they were dead the whole time, because I cannot believe how so many people thought that when it ended back in 2010, when they explained what actually happened so clearly. I get that maybe there have been a few unanswered questions, but I think a few of those are good to allow for a viewer interpretation. But I bet online you can find answers to 99% of your questions. Anyway, I thought I'd ask, as I really want to hear the wider, more specific opinions on the show. Thank you.
Oh, it's difficult. I haven't really thought that much about Lost since it ended in when? 2009?
Well, I mean, he said it ended here back in
2010. Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, I remember, because they live streamed it, but they simulcast it around the world, didn't they? So, like, when it aired in the US, it also aired around the world at the same time, so that everyone could watch the finale of Lost at the same time. Because there were some people in my work who I think were late into work, so they could watch it. And I was like, you sad bastards, you're never going to find out anything, because the show's very poorly written.
Yeah.
I was proved right.
As you would come in late off the back of a nonsense WWE pay-per-view.
Exactly.
That didn't answer any questions either. It really is. My frustrations with Lost are the same frustrations with WWE. There was never really any clear plan. They were making stuff up as they went along, and then they tried to swerve one too many times, and it ended up just being what we all thought it was in the first place. And it's Paul Dini, the Batman writer?
Batman animated series writer. Great writer.
I always like his story to sum up my feelings towards it, because this is exactly how I was. I watched season one, genuinely, not just for me, but I think for the larger television industry, it changed TV.
It was great.
Lost's pilot was the most expensive pilot ever made at that point.
I remember the hype around that show when it came out. It also came out just at the right time as well, because DVD box sets were becoming a big thing. So like that, like Lost became, I was a university, so like every single university student house had Lost Series 1 on DVD.
Yeah, with, was it Matthew Fox?
Yeah, on the front cover.
In the front, not with a J. And that pilot was the most expensive pilot ever made. It lost the guy who commissioned it his job. He was fired because Disney, I believe, own ABC. It was an ABC show.
Yep.
They said, what the hell are you doing? No one's going to watch this show. Why did you spend so much money on it? And that it became their most successful show up until that point of all time, with the DVD sales, with the ratings, because that first series was really quite new in terms of telling a story on mainstream TV. There was Sopranos in pre-existence already. That was telling a story over time.
That was like the genesis of prestige TV.
Yeah, but that was on HBO. That was still essentially behind a subscription service. This was network TV using those lessons from HBO for something a lot more broad. And a lot of it is A-level philosophy. It's nowhere near as intelligent as it thinks it is.
No.
But it's still really quite exciting, especially as a teenager, to be introduced to those ideas in a very exciting way, with like quite an innovative but largely repetitive flashback format, which they ingeniously turned on its head around season 4 when they started doing flash forwards. It's a really good twist, but then they sort of confused structural flashbacks with, no, that's literally travel in time. it became just such a hodgepodge of half-baked ideas. And Paul Dini, back to that story, he saw series 1, loved it, couldn't wait to find out what the answers to the questions were when he joined the writing team in season 2. He walked in and he was like, right, tell me what the smoke monster is. And they didn't know.
Yeah.
And that's like a fact. That they didn't know what it was.
JJ has been on record a lot saying, yeah, we were making it up as we went along. Like JJ and Damon Lindelof were all saying like, yep, we had no idea where we were going with this. Every time a new season starts, we didn't know, we sort of knew what an end point was, but we didn't really know how we were getting there. So we would just make it up week to week. And that for me is very, very poor thinking. I also think it was quite toxic in that, because the first series was just, here's a load of questions, and then we've got a big tease for this even bigger question. And then when you start season 2, it just asks more questions. It basically kind of like told other writers and other studios and other networks, so the secret to success is just ask questions and never give answers. Heroes had the exact same problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Heroes was all about questions and never giving answers. So every show all of a sudden just became this whole hodgepodge of ideas, as you said, of just like, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next, with everyone thinking like, well, let's answer some of these questions first before we start asking new questions.
Yeah, and one of the most dramatic ways to make that work is, yeah, you set up these mystery questions and then you provide an answer for a question that was so long ago that the audience almost forgot and they're like, oh my God, yes! But you're also set up 3 other questions. This is going to sound facetious, but it's not. I genuinely think it's an amazing film. Maze Runner does this perfectly.
Yeah.
The Maze Runner movie, the sort of answer, question, mystery, solve, is perfectly structured in that film.
Exactly, and you can always do the getting answers, asks more questions. But you have to have that answer there, as opposed to just being like, and here's another question. And here's another question.
It is all cocktails.
Yeah.
There is no happy endings.
I gave up after episode 1 of season 2 because that's when I realised they weren't going to answer anything. And I was like, I'm tapping out because I'm not wasting my time watching this.
You were a bit older than me, more mature. I used that sort of anxiety and questioning over the show's creative direction to make me entrench myself further. I was trying to ignore those concerns by saying, no, it is the greatest show ever. I've told this story before. I had the numbers on my laptop screensaver when I was a teenager, and I had to enter them every 104 minutes.
Really?
Otherwise, it would start an alarm going. I think it was 104, 102,
whatever,
something like that.
Was.
Yeah, and it was, you know, that was, I had no qualms with that. You know, obviously only when it was when it was awake, it wasn't when I was asleep. But I was obsessed with that show.
Yeah.
Obsessed. And it was around the same time that Weezer were releasing new material that wasn't what I wanted Weezer to be.
Yeah.
Based on their 90s stuff. And it was just this slow journey of me realizing that nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I think does the questions answers more questions brilliantly is Donnie Darko.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
I think
very good example.
So I studied Donnie Darko at school because it had just come out on DVD. As I did like my media studies paper on how movies use time travel to tell a story. And I did Bill and Ted, Back to the Future, and Donnie Darko. Because Donnie Darko is really, there's so much subtext in the film.
Yeah.
And there is an answer at the end, but that answer doesn't really answer things. But it sort of does, but there's a lot of your interpretation in there. And there was so much, it was like early days of like online writing of people writing their theories of what the ending of Donnie Darko means. I think that is what Lost was aiming to do, but couldn't do it as well.
Totally, totally. You've interestingly picked a decade movie, you know, Back to the Future, very 80s movie. Mm. Bill and Ted, totally 90s. I'd say Donnie Darko.
Came out in 89, but I get your point.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that. But Donnie Darko feels so noughties, early noughties. That was another DVD that everyone had.
Yes,
that
it
sort
was,
of metallic bunny head.
But not a S. Darko.
No, that's the sequel, right? Yes. Yeah. I was cool enough to have Harvey. The Jimmy Stewart 1940s movie that it was sort of inspired by.
I was at school when Donnie Darko came out, obviously, because I was doing my media A-levels. But I was in a band, and there was another band from another school that we used to play a lot of gigs with, and their drummer had the numbers that tattooed on his arm. He was very cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that tattoo has stood the test of time. all right, well, that's actually taken up more time than I thought it was going
to. That's lost. That is lost for you. It is not an easy subject.
But this also came in from Ben, who said, "Hello there, Luke, and everyone else at WrestleTalk. I promised I'd send over a pic of my Scott Pilgrim tattoo."
Oh, cool.
So
speaking
here
of tattoos.
I hope you enjoy. I loved getting it. Attached as a reference to go with as well. Only difference is he's wearing his jacket from the movie. Lots of love, and always from a $5 pledge hammer / podswafter. There is his tattoo.
Oh, that's cool, man, Benjamin.
The picture reference
nice.
As well.
Nice. So kind of loosely connected. Scott Pilgrim, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Ramona Flowers.
I'm in lesbians with her.
I watched Birds of Prey yesterday.
Yes, you did. What did you think of it?
I thought it was very entertaining.
Yeah, it is.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
So in the grand scheme of comic book movies, that's not good enough.
But in the grand scheme of DCEU
movies.
Oh,
it's a home run.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mops brow. Yeah. It's really fun. But it's trying to be Deadpool, and it's also trying to be Guardians. And it is nowhere near in the same league as either of those films.
No.
But, and actually, I tell you what, actually, what it does have over everything else is the energy and vibrancy of a comic book.
Yeah.
Like the actual experience of reading a comic book with flashbacks and narration. And
it's 20 minutes shorter.
Yes. Yeah, that is nice.
God, it's a breeze. Mm. Like when that film finished, I was like, those 2 hours flew by. I looked at my watch and realized it had only been on for an hour and 40. And I was like, yes, Hollywood has listened. We don't need 2 hour movies. 2 hour movies work fine if you've got 2 hours worth of material. But what I think Disney are very bad for, and a lot of studios are very bad for, is that they feel that you have to have 2 hours at a minimum, even if you've only got an hour and 40 worth of material.
Definitely.
And Harley Quinn, or Birds of Prey, whatever the film's called these days, only had an hour and 40 worth of material. So it did not stretch itself out for another 20. And that, I think, is a very... That's something that Zack Snyder really could have learned from with Batman v Superman, which somehow was too long and also too short at the same time.
It's ingenious in its own failure.
There will be papers written about that in sort of like 10 years' time, sort of marvelling at what a mess it is.
It was an open goal.
Yeah. The DCEU, like, you know, in its sort of like entirety, really was just an open goal that was massively missed. Anyway, shall we get out of here? Because we don't have a Friday magazine show this week.
No, well, we will be here with tomorrow, though, with Super Showdown.
Yes, but there could be no intro and outro on it. That's the point I was getting to. So we're not going to do an intro and outro on tomorrow's show because it will be our Super Showdown review. Super Showdown review. And then Pete and Andy will be back on SmackDown. Who knows who's going to be at that SmackDown show?
We haven't really spoken about AEW Revolution. I guess we should do that on Monday, me and you. I'm going to be watching it live.
Yeah. So what are you doing the review for? Are you doing a review?
Edited review, but we won't do like a podcast review on the Sunday, of course.
Should we do it on the Monday?
We'll do it on the Monday.
Yeah, we'll do the podcast.
I cannot wait.
Which is good, because I mean, I was planning on getting up early on Monday to watch it anyway, because I'm not going to be able to watch it live, which I'm actually gutted about. It's because of my stupid birthday.
Everyone else can join me and Andy Datsun. There was no one else. We tried. On the YouTube channel watching Revolution Live.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Luke Owen. You can follow me at This Is Luke Owen.
Ooh.
Trying a new thing. You're at Ollie Davis. We're on at WrestleTalk_TV, WrestleTalk.official on Instagram. Mm. We're doing a lot more stuff on the socials now, thanks to the brilliant Abby. If you're listening on Spotify, give us a little, press that follow button. Press the follow button and make the follow numbers go up. And if you're on iTunes, give us a little rating and review. Take care. I love you. Goodbye. Rock.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.